Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK Public Radio in Petersburg. It's Midday Magazine for Wednesday, the 5th of June, 2019. I'm Joe Vicnicki with the local news. A bill to fund permanent fund dividends of roughly $3,000 failed narrowly in the state Senate yesterday. The Senate started off with a bill that would have provided for a $1,600 dividend, but supporters of the larger PFDs successfully amended the bill to raise it to the full amount under the law the state followed until 3 years ago. Anchorage Republican Senator Mia Costello supported the larger dividend. She was part of a Senate majority that voted to reduce those payments the last 2 years. But Fairbanks Republican Senator Click Bishop made a fiery speech opposing the full amount. He says it would put the state on a path to spend the $19 billion in permanent fund earnings in the same way it spent $12 billion in another reserve account. Governor Mike Dunleavy says the legislature should pass the full dividend amount and the state budget. He says any change to the dividend formula should go to a vote of the people. Dunleavy says he wants the budget to be smaller and believes the state can balance the budget in 2 years. The Senate could take back its vote against the bill as soon as this Friday. That's when Wasilla Republican Senator Mike Schauer, who is absent due to his work as a pilot, will be back in Juneau. Schauer supports the full dividend. If the Senate passes the full bill, it's not clear what the House would do. The House majority formed with the goal of not spending down state savings. There are some promising returns of younger wild stock king salmon on one southeast Alaska river this spring. Returns of fully grown Chinook are still disappointing, but the increase in younger fish could signal a rebound in future years. Low numbers of kings on the Taku River near Juneau and other southeast rivers prompted the second year of closures for commercial and sport fishing for parts of the region. The Taku has a forecast for just over 9,000 adult kings this year, the second lowest ever. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game uses tangle nets and a fish wheel to count fish swimming up that river. Ed Jones is Fish and Game Coordinator with the department's Sport Fish Division.
In both projects, we're seeing a good number, what I would view as probably an average number of jacks, that's precocial males. There are smaller Chinook salmon, come back as younger age fish. And that's influencing the catches, and everybody's hearing about it, but right now it's not looking like the catches of adult or the larger fish, the older age fish, is any different than what we forecasted. It's still not looking that great. But the jacks look to be up in abundance, and that's definitely a good sign, and we've been waiting for about a decade to see that happen, so that's a promising sign for the future.
Those young fish returning to spawn before growing to full size can signal the relative strength or weakness of future years' returns. Jones says that river is also seeing increased numbers of the smallest three-year-old jack kings that have spent just 1 year in the ocean. In these days of depressed stocks, an average run would be an improvement.
We have, I think, two average brood years, or maybe an average and above average brood or parent year coming now in the Taku, and that's a good sign because, you know, it's one thing to have just a good parent year come through and cycle through, but what we want to see to get out of this period of poor production is back to back to back good brood years, parent years, and that'll truly get us out of it.
Meanwhile, the forecast for the Stikine River near Wrangell is 8,250 fish, not even half of the average and well below escapement goals. Jones says there are no signs of adult kings on that river outpacing the forecast either. He says the department only uses the tangle nets for counting on the Stikine.
The fish wheels are very good representation of the age structure that's coming in the river. They catch basically all sizes of Chinook salmon, whereas the nets are designed to catch the larger fish, and the smaller fish just go right on through them. So we really don't know what's happening on the Stikine in terms of jacks, but generally speaking, the two rivers cycle together. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's also good numbers of jacks coming in the Stikine, but we just can't tell right now.
Last year, just over 8,300 adult kings made it back to spawn on the Stikine and 7,200 on the Taku. The fish can swim hundreds of miles up those rivers to spawn, typically sometime in August. and hatchery king salmon are starting to show up in the waters around Petersburg. A few lucky anglers have been catching those Chinook. The fish are produced by the Crystal Lake Hatchery on southern Mitkoff Island. They are released each year at two sites, in Blind Slough, about 17 miles south of Petersburg, and City Creek, about 3 miles east of downtown. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game sport fish biologist Patrick Fowler says the department forecasts a return of 3,400 kings at Blind Slough this year. That would be up a little bit from last year.
The vanguard has just started to arrive, so there's a few fish in the freshwater. The saltwater fishery that started this past Saturday on June 1st, there's a lot of folks out there. The catch rates aren't super great. There's a few fish harvested. But that fishery typically just gets better and better until the last 2 weeks of June, when we see our peak catch rates.
Those Blind Slough kings can be caught in freshwater at Blind River Rapids and in the ocean water of the Wrangell Narrows. For that area, it's the same regulations as last year, allowing anglers to keep two fish over 28 inches and two fish under 28 inches. One thing to keep an eye on with those fish is stream conditions. With the ongoing drought in southeast, Blind Slough has experienced big die-offs of those hatchery fish in some past summers with warmer temperatures and a lack of rain. Meanwhile, fishing opens on June 15th for kings around City Creek. That's a release site that started in 2014. The forecast is also up for that run, with around 700 kings expected to make it back to Frederick Sound. Last year, only a couple hundred fish returned. That's because a fire at the Crystal Lake Hatchery destroyed the fish produced in 2015. Fowler says this is the third year for fully grown fish at that site.
Yeah, the first year we had adult fish coming back. We had some good effort and some good catch rates out there. It went surprisingly well. And then last year we kind of had a gap where we had a very small area open to the fishery and a very few fish back to it. And then this year we're back to kind of a standard return size, and we have a little bigger area to fish in.
That open area stretches from the navigational buoy at the mouth of Wrangell Narrows to a fish and game marker about a mile east of City Creek. Fowler says he's only heard limited reports of kings swimming up into City Creek to spawn in prior years.
You know, City Creek is really poor habitat for king salmon. It's a very low flow bedrock, not very good spawning habitat that king salmon would seek out. But I think they do, especially when the water's high, they'll push into City Creek and then usually probably back out. It's just not a very good place for king salmon to hang out. There's a few little deep pools as you get up the stream that might hold a few fish, but most of the fishing is going to be there on the saltwater.
And the bag and possession limit for that area, one fish of any size. The floating net pen used to hold young fish slated for release will remain anchored in the area. Those fish are held in the pen for about 1 month prior to their release, just long enough to imprint the City Creek location. Some big decisions are being made right now that could affect how the Tongass National Forest is managed. The conversation has largely centered on old-growth logging. Should the U.S. Forest Service move away from selling its oldest trees? Originally, the plan was to transition to a different type of timber economy altogether, young growth. But there are still questions about how to make that industry viable. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has the story of one business owner who wants to have that talk over ice cream.
Lately, there's been a bit of a building frenzy at a new Juno Food Cart alley. It's tucked away from the typical bustle of cruise ship passengers, but you can still spot them with cameras wrapped around their neck. One of the flagship carts wants those visitors to sample a taste of Alaska. It's an unusual way to eat a salmon.
You know, it's kind of fun to think of, oh, when you're in Juneau, you have to have the salmon ice cream, right?
Mark Wheeler is the owner of Copa. Other selections from his cart include Spruce Tip and Devil's Club ice cream. He wants his customers to consider where these flavors come from, the Tongass National Forest. And today, Wheeler's taking another step to reinforce that message.
You're safe, going.
A flatbed truck arrives carrying a large wooden arch. It'll be the focal point for Wheeler's operation, a kind of mini carport for the ice cream stand where customers can lick their spoons without getting caught in the rain. What sets this structure apart is the material it's being built from, locally milled spruce trees that are only about 50 years old. On an ecological scale, that's a young tree. For Wheeler, it was about more than creating something from a niche product. It's a statement. He doesn't think there should be large-scale old-growth logging in the Tongass.
Being a business owner, you have all these ways to have a positive impact, and these choices of how you buy things, you know, can make a big difference.
Wheeler intentionally sought this wood out and found one family sawmill near Tinicky Springs producing the material. To be clear, you can run down to any hardware store and buy 2x4s made out of young-growth trees. The lumber just won't be from Alaska. That's something Connor Reynolds from the Nature Conservancy would like to see changed.
Maybe it's idealistic or optimistic, but it's a nut that needs to be cracked.
Right now, the nation's largest national forest is at a crossroads. Federal old-growth timber sales were supposed to be phased out over the span of 16 years. But recent efforts by the state of Alaska and Senator Lisa Murkowski could undo that. A top federal official is making a decision this summer that could impact transitioning the region's economy to young growth. Still, Reynolds thinks the already struggling timber industry can't sustain itself on a supply of old-growth trees forever.
The death knell is kind of sounding on it.
He says much of the old growth in the Tongass has already been logged, and the Forest Service has had trouble making the timber sales it does offer pencil out. There's also ongoing litigation from environmental groups. So, if there's going to be a timber industry in Southeast Alaska at all, Reynolds believes cutting young growth trees is the future. But he acknowledges there are challenges, like convincing investors to take the leap in an already crowded market.
Somebody, some entrepreneur up here would have to find a product that they can make from it that isn't in direct competition with a place, you know, in Shelton, Washington, that's going through 500 million board feet a year.
Some small sawmills are creating young growth products in limited runs, making items like shingles and lumber to be sold in state. But Reynolds says creating more jobs from this is still in its early days. Back at the food cart alley, builder Steve Klinger is drilling red corrugated metal on top of the young growth wood. The showpiece, an arch which will be the gateway to Copa's ice cream stand, has been charred with fire.
So they call it, shogubon or shosugibon.
It's a Japanese technique that prevents the wood from molding. But another one of the design elements isn't intentional. One of the pieces of lumber warped in the sun. There's a reason young growth typically fetches a cheaper price than old growth. Younger trees have fewer rings in them, which means the wood isn't always as strong as its counterpart. Klinger says it might faze some builders.
An older guy that's cut wood his whole life would look at it and sort of probably kind of spurn it a little bit.
But Klinger just saw it as a happy accident. It's now the curved top of the arch, where customers can nibble bites of spruce dip ice cream under what was once a young spruce tree. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
One note of disclosure, Mark Wheeler serves on the Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission. KFSK has an open airwaves policy. We encourage the public to express personal opinions, ideas, and creative works, which will be available on our website, kfsk.org, following their scheduled radio broadcast. The views and opinions expressed are not necessarily those of KFSK. The following was submitted for broadcast by Joe Sebastian.
This past April, I sent Senator Murkowski an email on her website, and I'd like to read the letter I emailed to her. Dear Senator, the news called the Nebraska storm a bomb cyclone, and the flood rainstorms in the southern states atmospheric rivers. The negative effects of climate change are happening now and only promise to get worse. In an Alaska Public Radio news story, the Arctic Ocean looks like what was predicted by computer models for the year 2050, and it's already happening now 30 years faster than scientists thought. I heard you talk by chance in the early winter on C-SPAN about climate change and innovation and reaching across the aisle. But Senator, for the love of God, you can't clear-cut the Tongass, ship out round logs to China or Asia, and boo-hoo about climate change. Please, Senator, I beg you. You know what the right thing to do is, but you do not do it. Your policies are making things worse by thousands of degrees. Leave the Tongass roadless rural areas in place. Let the forests absorb the carbon overload in our atmosphere. That is what we need at this critical juncture of human history. Can't you understand that, Senator? Our planet is going down. That's all you hear about on the news every day. Antarctica, Greenland, the Arctic, all melting like crazy, and a new hurricane season right around the corner. If we cannot find clear thinking leadership from you, then where are we to turn? Our technology is still behind the curve. The forests are already in place and doing their job for free. Let them do it. By cutting them down, we only increase the release of even more carbon into the atmosphere. Please, Senator, see the light. All life on Earth now depends on doing the right thing in the right consecutive order while we still have a chance to effect a more positive outcome. You are perfectly poised to start to help turn the tide on this issue. You can be recognized in history as a hero or just another mumbo-jumbo politician. Let this be your finest hour, Senator. Time really is running out. Since the time this email was sent, the Senator is still pushing a scorched earth agenda on the Tongass with no change in sight. But in the meantime, there have been a few more thoughts on this issue. Sea Alaska Corporation recently sold carbon credits on a 100-year cycle to a big corporation for a sizable chunk of old-growth forest that it now owns. Under federal laws, carbon credits cannot be sold on federal lands. However, Senator Murkowski is chairman of the Energy and Resources Committee, and by working across the aisle, she could amend current law restricting the sale of carbon credits on federal roadless rural lands, and nationwide there are 60 million acres of roadless rural lands. The sale of carbon credits on these lands would allow corporations that pollute to buy long-term leases on standing forests covered by the rule. These funds could be used for the Secure Rural Schools Act. This program would keep wild areas in place for tourism, subsistence, hunting, fish and wildlife, and keep the trees busy soaking up carbon for the long term. By merging necessity with wisdom, these lands could continue their work on all fronts for years and years into the future. Will the Senator buy into a plan that works for the needs of Alaskans? Is a good measure for climate change and a positive program for funding into the future. It could be a win-win, positive solution in a changing world.
This creative work you've just heard was submitted for broadcast by Joe Sebastian. KFSK encourages the public expression of personal opinions, ideas, and creative works. Views and opinions expressed are not necessarily those of KFSK. For information, call General Manager Tom Abbott at 772-3808. For local news, I'm Joe Vignicki.